Trying to rouse up some interest in giving a talk. Just before coming here, I've been sitting in my chair, kind of stretched out and sprawled back with Ajahn Krunadamo's comment was, you know, it doesn't look like there's much chi flowing. I was feeling but I'm thinking of the Ajahn Chah's kind of admonition of, you feel like practicing and you practice, you feel like meditating, you meditate. You don't feel like meditating, you meditate. And it's just, you don't feel like practicing, you practice. You feel like practicing, you practice. It's still, it's what we have to do. We have to learn how to apply our attention to practicing, to training, and whether we're kind of up and enthused about it, or whether we're kind of feeling kind of dreary, and we still have to maintain the practice and learning how to be patient within the training, within the practice. And it isn't as if it has to be a particular way in order for it to be right practice. And with Ajahn Chah again, sort of saying steady practice is right practice, and that just being steady with the willingness to keep directing attention to what the experience is. I think in terms of the meditation, and just being able to direct attention to the breath, to the meditation object, directing it in ways that are useful or meaningful. I think there's a kind of a dullness and kind of lack of energy, then still one has to direct attention in a way that is useful or meaningful. It may not be dazzling, but at least not to be sunk in that feeling, to identify with that feeling, to not to absorb in that feeling. It's like I used it in the Thanksgiving retreat. It was like from a slogan at a political rally, written on a sign that has a useful kind of extension to the meditation, sort of a take on or spin off of Patrick Henry, give me apathy or give me whatever. that sense of sometimes that's what it feels like in the meditation is that not much kind of zing happening. But still, there needs to be a directing of attention. One can't just acquiesce to whatever. And sometimes when we are practicing, meditating, and there is that kind of lack of energy, then to be using the themes of reflection, to bringing up a theme of reflection, thinking, you know, one of the teachings that the Buddha gives that I think is really very, very helpful for at any time. But because one of the qualities that the Buddha praises and refers to over and over again is in the Pali, Dhamma no Dhamma Patibhata, practicing Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma. And it's so important to be reflecting on that, because we can practice Dhamma practice Dhamma according to our views and opinions, practice Dhamma according to something that the world praises, practice Dhamma in order to get something we want. I mean, there's all sorts of aspects of how Dhamma is practiced. But practicing Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma is a really helpful, necessary contemplation, to be kind of encouraging the mind to be, how do I align myself with Dhamma? And, you know, whether one is energetic or whether one is kind of energy is flat, still, how does one practice Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma? And the Buddha kind of defines it as one keeps contemplating, investigating, and practicing for the arising of disenchantment, of nipita, so that sense of disenchantment, and disenchantment towards form, disenchantment toward feeling, disenchantment toward perception, disenchantment toward mental formations, disenchantment toward consciousness. So these five khandhas, to be that practicing Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma is whatever way, shape, or form or technique practice that facilitates that arising of disenchantment, or dispassion, disenchantment toward the body, feeling, perceptions, mental formations, consciousness. That is a valid and fruitful way to be practicing the Dhamma. And sometimes that can be through our developing of the samatha object, can be through developing our insight and reflective investigations in terms of experience. But that framing of our experience to foster the quality of disenchantment toward the experience of the body, and looking at it in different ways, in terms of feeling, and that recognizing the ephemeral, changing nature of feeling, and the pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, neutral feeling, recognizing that we our the experience of our world is constantly shifting and changing around just those feelings. But then, of course, those feeling that feeling is the kind of the ignition point for all sorts of reactions and perceptions and proliferations and judgments and desire and clinging and attachment and complication, and to be able to approach the experience of feeling from a place of fostering disenchantment. You know, the same with perception. How we perceive things is so intertwined with our biases, our conditioning, our preferences, our views that we hold, and we tend not to trace things back and recognize more clearly how perception functions, how perception colors colors our experience, so that to be able to approach that, and we can't just not decide to write out perception from the equation of our human existence. It's part and parcel of our human experience, so that we have to learn how it works. We have to learn how it functions, but you know, without that fostering and encouraging of disenchantment, then we tend to get swept up in just reactions that we don't understand clearly where it's taking us. So that sense of disenchantment of nipita is one of you know, like Bhikkhu Bodhi has been translating nipita as disgust. And which is a very strong word in English, and I think has connotations that leaning toward the negative and the aversive, actually, usually, but to hold that sense of say losing the flavor and disenchantment, being just not being swept up in the charm of something, the illusion of appearances. And that nipita, in all of the conditional relations of the development of the mind, nipita is something that is like it's actually way down the line in the cultivations of within the practice, and the Buddha goes through various sequences of conditional relations, beginning at different places, beginning with virtue, beginning with wise reflection, beginning with faith, and various starting points. But then it goes into these sequences of conditions with the arising of pamoja, of delight, and with the, say with delight as a condition, as the arising of joy, of bhiti. And with the arising of bhiti, that's the condition for the arising of tranquility, and paucity, which is a kind of a relaxing, a settling, tranquility, a well-being. And then with the arising of tranquility, there's the arising of sukha, which is sort of both a say, mental and physical happiness. And that with the say, contingent on these different aspects of happiness and well-being is the arising of samadhi. With that quality of stability and clarity of mind, there's the arising of the knowledge and vision of the way things truly are, yatha bhutan yatha dasana. And it's with that knowledge and vision of the way things truly are that there's the arising of nipita, this disenchantment. So that it's not an aversive reaction to experience. It's a very clear assessment from a place of well-being and contentment that one recognizes that one's been driven and pushed and deluded by the experience of body, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness, and that quality of nipita, of disenchantment, of losing the flavor when the Buddha is defining this quality of dhamma or dhamma patibhata, and when one cultivates disenchantment toward form, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness, then one comprehends form, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness. One comprehends it, one understands it, one clearly recognizes both its implications, its limitations, its benefits. One comprehends and understands, so that that clear understanding is based on a disenchantment, breaking the enchantment, being able to step back from the charm or the spell of it that one's been cast under. And it's through the Buddha continues in terms of this dhammano dhammapatibhata, and when one comprehends form, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness, then one is released from. So that release from the power of the five khandhas, and the power of the upadana khandha, the khandhas conditioned by clinging, That is dependent on that comprehension and disenchantment. So that in our practice, we're either, well, at any time really, to be bringing that up as a question: how do I practice Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma? Am I just trying to fulfill some kind of view or an opinion that I've picked up myself for some reason, or I've inherited from something around me? And it's so essential to go back to, well, what's the Buddha teaching us? What's the Buddha's guidance on that? And this is a very, very, very direct pointing to the essentials of the practice, the foundation of the practice. We keep precepts, we train in virtue, we develop the meditations, we do different types of concentration exercises to stabilize the mind. We investigate, we develop discernment and wisdom, study this to gain an understanding of in terms of knowledge and discernment. But does it actually align with what is it Dhamma no Dhamma Patibhata? Is it practicing Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma? And just that very simple realignment to direct that attention toward disenchantment, toward the five khandhas, toward comprehending the five khandhas, to being released from the five khandhas. These are it's really fundamental to right practice. It's one of the chants that they do in Thailand on a pretty regular basis. Bhāla vai pañca khandha. These five khandhas are a burden. They're something heavy that we have to carry around. They're learning how to relinquish that burden, putting down that putting down the heavy weight of this, that it isn't as if it's been foisted on us. We've kind of in our delusion, kind of happily picked it up and complain about it. So to be able to cultivate these different ways of fostering disenchantment.